Yes, we're back, and you're in the right place because this is the place where we stretch in God's direction, where we recognize that faith is absolute confidence in the trustworthiness of God. And I'm Pastor Rick Stevens, and I want to welcome you to our time together. We're going to spend a little time today talking about some important things. And in case you are new to the program and probably wondering what's going on here, well, this is Instant Sermon Weekend. Typically at our church, and I'm the pastor at Diplomat Wesleyan Church in Cape Coral, Florida, typically at our church, when a month has five Sundays, on that fifth Sunday, we have what we call, and I don't think the name is unique to us, we call it Instant Sermon. No, it's not take a pastor and add water and stir. Instant Sermon is the opportunity for us to have a conversation. It's mostly one way because people will submit a Bible verse that they've been wondering about or a concept that they wonder what God has to say about it. Or sometimes a question of current events, what's going on in the world around us, and what might God say about that. And we call it Instant Sermon because then I spend a little time and we talk about that. We think our way through that. And sometimes people in the congregation will make a contribution to that, and that's fine. We just try to explore together the things that are on our minds, and we call it Instant Sermon. And so I brought that to the podcast, and every time we have a fifth weekend, fifth Sunday for the podcast, we do Instant Sermon. Well, we didn't do it last week because last week was Easter, and it didn't seem to me that we needed to do Instant Sermon on Easter. I mean, Easter needs its own attention, don't you think? Absolutely, you're right. It does need its own attention. And so we celebrated Easter at our church and on the podcast, and now we moved Instant Sermon back to this weekend. So we're going to talk about some questions that people are asking, and I usually take the questions from things that people have brought up to me and things that are on their mind, sometimes from previous Instant Sermon times. We can't really do this live time here. That'd be a little awkward and difficult, but I brought some questions that people have been thinking about and asking about and talking about, and some of them quite recent, some of them over a time I've heard from time to time, and sometimes they get repeated, but I came across a few ideas that I'm not sure we've touched on, but if we haven't, we should, and so we will. And so we're going to take this time this week to think our way through some of the things that are going on in the world. And we're going to think about them in light of what the Bible says and how we can stretch in God's direction. You know, it's our responsibility to understand God and what He's doing. We know God understands us because, well, in case you hadn't realized it, it was His idea. He created everything that we know, everything we could never know, God is responsible for. And so God understands us, our situation, what we need, what information will help us, what information will confuse us, what information is none of our business. Perhaps we could think of it that way. And we need to resolve that and settle that. And I have always been, and always will be, I expect, in search of answers to important questions. But I also want to respect God enough to realize that there are some things that I might not like to know the answer to that God will remain silent on. I don't always know why He does that, but it's not my job to understand all of the whys of God. It's my job to understand what God is telling us, telling me, and to accept that, and to then put all of my other thoughts in line with that. And so it helps me arrive to a point when I ask my questions, when I wrestle with things, where I have a satisfied mind. I'm not suggesting we ignore things. I'm suggesting we come to a resolution of things and questions and all of that. And I hope you have found a church where you can ask questions, where you have some people you trust, some people who will tell you the truth more than they will tell you what you want to hear. We had that conversation a little bit this week, a few of us here at the church. We were talking about how do churches get themselves in some of the knots they get themselves into. And I said to them, one of the things we need to realize is that some churches want their pastors to tell them only what they want to hear. And that's sadly the case. Some churches, whether they say it out loud or not, they make it clear that their pastor is to stay away from certain subjects. He's not supposed to say certain things. Well, on the other hand, at our church, we talk about this. We haven't really talked about it out loud in an explicit way for a while, but it came up this week, and I mentioned that one of the reasons churches have some of their struggles is they don't want the pastor to tell them the truth. And around our church, people are happy, well, maybe not always happy, but are convinced that I, as the pastor, should deliver what God says in His Word, whether they like that particular perspective or not. Now, does that make me always correct? Probably not. I would never claim any kind of infallibility. But it does say to us and helps us say to each other that we want to know the truth. We don't want it sanitized or marginalized or any kind of eyes to keep us away from what God is saying. And so that's kind of the way we approach things. What does the Bible say? Not what does somebody down the street say? What does not some so-called expert say? What does God say? And how do we approach that? And are we willing to hear it? And are we willing to adjust our lives in light of what God says? See, all of those things are important, and that's what we do here. So that's a little background on how we get to Instant Sermon Sunday. But I also think it's important for us to remind ourselves here post-Easter, something that I've been saying for a while, and I think people think I'm nuts, but then they agree with me. But I've been saying this for a long time. Easter never ends. Easter never ends. Well, people think about that, and you know how we are in our celebrations. A holiday will come up, and take the 4th of July. We celebrate on July 4th, and on July 5th, we forgot all about it. We move on to the next thing. Well, that tends to be the way, the rhythm of our lives these days, is we anticipate something, then it's over, and we're on to the next thing, and we get ready to anticipate something else. In that case, we move on from 4th of July, and a few days later, we're starting to think about Labor Day, maybe, or maybe some other important event in our lives, maybe an anniversary or a birthday. But you understand what I mean by that. Well, in the case of the things that happened in history that make a huge, indeed permanent difference, we shouldn't move on from them just because the calendar changes. And so I've been saying, and I want to say to all of us again and remind us that Easter never ends. And that's obvious on one hand, and it's kind of like, well, what do you mean by that on the other? Well, the obvious thing is that when Jesus came back to life, when he rose from the dead, that was permanent. He did not die again. He is permanently alive, and one day we will all see him again. It'll be good for those who are right and ready. It'll be not so good for those who have been ignoring him or taking him for granted or telling him he should like them the way they are and they don't need to change, and he should like whatever behaviors they do, irregardless of whether he thinks it's sinful or righteous. Well, that's just kind of the way people are. They make their decisions whether to follow him or not, but we will all see him, and Easter never ends. The other thing that reminds us of is that one day when God makes all the wrong things right, we will live forever with him. Easter never ending. It never ends. The reality of resurrection never ends. Every now and then, sadly, someone we know about, or maybe someone in our family, maybe in our circle of friends, will die. And that is an end. We have lost their companionship forever. But in the case of Easter, Easter never ends. God never dies, Jesus never dies, and we go on forever. So we're in the season of the church that we, as we tell the story of Jesus, that we call Easter. You may remember the year that we follow, that what we call the church year, sometimes it's called the Christian year, starts in Advent with the anticipation of the coming of Jesus. And there's two sides of that, the anticipation of what we just talked about, of Jesus' return again, and there's the anticipation of celebration of his birth. So Advent leads up to Christmas, which takes place in our celebration on December 25th, and that begins the season of Christmas. So we celebrate Jesus' birth not just on the day, but continuing on through there, we come to Epiphany, where we remember the wise men arrived, and that the giving of Messiah was made known to the Gentiles. And that's a reminder, because these were Gentiles that came to honor Jesus, the Magi or the kings. So we go from Advent to Christmas to Epiphany. We celebrate then the life of Jesus in a number of ways. His baptism, sometimes his temptation, different stories of Jesus during that season of the year. We follow the life of Jesus. We come to Lent, where Jesus in his life began to turn his attention toward Jerusalem and the cross. We follow that journey. We come to Palm Sunday, celebrate the entry of Jesus into Jerusalem. We celebrate various events during that week, depending upon your tradition, how many of them you celebrate. Some people make a special effort to celebrate what's called Maundy Thursday, the giving of Holy Communion to us, or the institution of Eucharist celebration, when Jesus had that Last Supper, that last Passover with his disciples. We move to Good Friday, the crucifixion, Holy Saturday, that time between, oh my, Jesus died, to resurrection, when, oh my, Jesus lives, and all that that meant in the unfolding story of Jesus. And now we're in that season after Easter, where we continue to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. He did things. He appeared to people during this period of time leading up to his ascension, which we get to as the year unfolds. And in our church, we've been telling the story of Jesus like that, using our calendar just as a tool to tell the story of Jesus again, because sometimes people don't know that story. So we're in the Easter season. Easter never ends. Make sure you live in light of that reality. Easter never ends. Easter never ends. All right, let's go ahead and let's start talking about some things. And I'm sure we'll have to interrupt our line of thinking, because some of what I have to talk about is kind of extensive. But I think it's worth another hearing, another thinking through, particularly because we're coming up into, or well, I guess we're full-blown into in many ways, an election season. Election seasons seem to go on a long time in our country. And yes, I know the election isn't until November, but a lot is being done, some of it behind the scenes and that we don't see very much of, only some limited reporting on. Some of it's right out in front of us all the time, and we can't hardly miss it. But this came up again in a conversation I had with someone recently about someone had gone to church and heard the pastor speak, and they were relaying this information to me, this person was, that people were just tired of hearing about politics at church. Well, I don't know if this particular pastor overdid it or not. I'm acquainted with this pastor, and I don't think that he would overdo it. But the person was kind of bummed about, why do I have to keep hearing about politics when I go to church? After all, I go to church to get away from all of the things, all of the crazy things that go on. And I go to church and all of a sudden the pastor's talking about those crazy things. What do I do? How do I make sense of all of this? Well, that's a fair question. And I think it's a proper question. And I think that it's, we are very, how should I say, very at risk, very close to violating an important boundary when we begin to question whether a pastor should talk about one thing or another. After all, and I said this just a minute ago, we need to have this agreement that the pastor should give us the word of God in whatever way he believes God is talking to him, and that will help the people. We have to trust the pastor to do that. So how do we think about some of these kinds of things? How do we keep them in proper perspective? How do we keep them in God's perspective? Well, I think we need to talk about that a little bit. I have generally been in favor of pastors addressing the issues of the day much more than most pastors do. I'm saddened when I think that pastors won't address some of the things that are obviously important issues, issues of right and wrong, issues of sin and righteousness. And yet, if we're silent about them, how do we help people navigate to follow Jesus? So I'm generally in favor of pastors speaking up more. So how do we kind of keep that in perspective? You may be well informed about a topic, and then when you hear the pastor talk about it, you're thinking, oh, I already know all of that. Let's talk about something different. Well, I respect that. But you got to also realize not everybody does, so you need to respect that aspect as well. But let me help us think through a couple of, more foundational perspectives on these things. Because if all we do is think about what irritates us or what gets our attention, we don't peel back the layers of what's going on to understand better. So I always like to think a little bit farther than the surface level in the presenting situation. So first of all, can we agree? I hope we can agree that things have become way too focused on politics. It didn't used to be this way. Some of us who've been around a while, we remember when it wasn't this way. But with the development of 24-hour news, with all of the TV news channels and all of them having to put out some kind of content all the time, things have become really focused on what's in the public eye and what people seem to be interested in. Apparently, interest in politics is at an all-time high because they wouldn't put it out there if people didn't watch it. They couldn't sell advertising if people didn't watch it. So you have to understand that when you're watching television, you are the product. Now, never forget that. When you're watching any type of media, maybe it's a movie or some streaming channel, maybe it's something on another website that you're watching. When you're watching, you are the product that person is selling because they get ahead by the number of people that watch their particular program or listen to their song in the case of songs that are out there in whatever form they are. You are the product. They're trying to get you to put your eyes on it and your ears on it. And when they get you to do that, then that signals them to provide more of that kind of content. So part of it we have to realize is we're watching it. So, you know, I've said this before, and you probably heard it from other people too. If you're tired of that political stuff, turn it off. You know, there is an on-off switch on every device, and you don't have to listen to it. Listen to what is helpful, but turn the noise off. Get your news in a way that helps you have the proper perspective. I think this particular channel that you're listening to now helps you with that. And so you can listen to things here that will keep you from being inflamed by some of the craziness that's out there, and you'll get a more balanced perspective. So listen to the places that you can trust and sort all that stuff out a little bit. Have some discernment, shall we say. So yes, things have become way too political, largely because we want them to be. And there's another aspect of this too that I think people don't recognize. And again, you and I can't change things just by turning off a television program. Okay, I get that. But we can begin to move it when we start talking about that. I talked to someone just recently that says, I don't watch the news at all. Well, I thought that was good. They get their news in a different way. They've made that statement and it doesn't eat at them in the same way. So that's part of it. But the other thing is this, is as long as we as a people, and I know I'm talking about the whole country in general here, as long as we have, as a people keep expecting the government to do more and more for us to solve this problem, that problem, the other problem, give us this, give us that, whatever, the more we expect of government, the more we have to realize that puts more and more emphasis on the political arena because that's where that stuff gets done. And so if we expect the government to solve this problem and that problem and the other problem, if we expect the government to solve every economic ill that the country has, if we expect the government to solve our medical problems, if we expect the government to solve our education problems, if we expect the government to do anything, then we're simply emphasizing the political arena. How much better it would be if we said to the government, just leave us alone. And we did not emphasize their role in all of this. Now, there will always be an important role for government. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is we keep expecting the government to solve our problems. And so that puts more emphasis on politics, the very thing now people are complaining about, they don't want to hear about. All right, so that's part of it that begins to help us think through this thing. But there's another couple of other things that we need to make sure we remember as you're wrestling with this, particularly as you might be a person who says, I don't want to hear about politics at church. Well, let's think about what that means, because I understand that, and I'm generally with you on that. But I think about that a little differently than you do. And I think that when we use the term politics in such a general, all-inclusive way, we don't think as carefully and specifically as we should. So let me suggest that you think of this whole area that too often is called politics in two different ways. Think of citizenship as one part of it, and think of politics as another part. Both have their place, but if you can sort this out and think about this in these terms, it can help you put things in the right place in your mind and in your thinking and help you make better decisions. So what do I mean? Well, I think that citizenship is something that we should all be concerned about, and we should all be the best of citizens. Now, what I mean by citizenship in general is we care about citizenship because we care about the pursuit of righteous government. We want government to do right, and we want the right kind of government. We want government to function right. We want it to do the right thing. So we pursue righteous government. Now, that's always going to be a challenge because we pursue righteous government in a world where there are, frankly, unrighteous people. And sometimes the people who are unrighteous get involved in government. Well, that's a bad thing and a harmful thing. But as citizens and as people who pursue righteous government, just because there are bad actors around, unrighteous people, if you will, doesn't give us a pass for being involved. We still need to pursue righteous government. That is citizenship. We all have that responsibility. That's one reason that I'm convinced every Christian needs to vote, because we are citizens pursuing righteous government. Well, then people will say, well, how can I be a citizen pursuing righteous government when I feel like too many times I have to vote for the lesser of two evils? How many times have we all heard that? How many times have some of us said that? Okay, I understand. Let's unpack that a little bit too, because if we're going to be citizens pursuing righteous government, we have to think about what that means when it comes to voting. Because when it comes to voting, we generally have, it's because of our political system, it's not necessarily anybody's fault, okay? You can like it, you can dislike it, but it's the way the Constitution set up our government, and we solved a lot of problems with that Constitution if we'd only follow it. And one of the things that it set up was that there's always going to be a choice between two people. It just comes down to that. So how do you decide, and do you always have to decide between the lesser of two evils? Well, I contend that that's the wrong way to think about it. If you always think about the lesser of two evils, you are always assuming that everybody that's on the ballot is unrighteous. Now, I'm not here to tell you that everybody on the ballot is righteous. I'm here to tell you that they are people. You will find righteous people on ballots. You will find unrighteous people on ballots. The challenge for us is to sort out how do we know how to vote. What if both candidates, in our view, are unrighteous? Well, there you go. There's a real problem, isn't it? Yes and no. I want to encourage you, as you evaluate candidates, to carefully think through and answer this question. Which candidate will lessen evil? As you listen to them talk, as you hear them say, I'm going to do this if elected, or I'm going to do that if elected, ask yourself and answer the question, which candidate will lessen evil? That will give you a clue as to who to vote for. You're not going to be trapped in that whole endless and defeating thinking of voting for the lesser of two evils. You're going to be able to say, as near as I can tell, by careful judgment, I can pray about it, and I have, and I will, and all of that. You can then identify the candidate that will lessen evil. If we could do that, we could move the country in the direction of righteous government. Will it ever be perfect? I don't think so, because we are all imperfect people. But we can move in the right direction if we will pursue citizenship. righteous government, and if we will elect people who will lessen evil. Well, that's only a bare beginning of some of these things, and we're, again, doing an instant sermon, a response to some of the things people are thinking about these days, and we'll keep doing that. I'm Pastor Rick. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Spike proteins help viruses enter into your cells, disrupting your health and your well-being. Global Healing's Foreign Protein Cleanse detoxes your body of spike proteins, which allows your body to repair from within, supporting your immune and respiratory systems and regulating your inflammatory response. Formulated by Dr. Edward Group and by Dr. Brian Artis, Foreign Protein Cleanse targets and detoxes spike proteins in the body. Go to AmericaOutLoud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with Heal Right. Heal Right is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, Heal Right is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit healright.com/outloud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutLoud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutLoud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Well, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Now, George Washington once encouraged us to animate and encourage each other and show the whole world that a free man contending for liberty on his own ground is superior to any slavish mercenary on earth. That's exactly what we do, as you'll see when you visit AmericaOutLoud.news. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back. I'm Pastor Rick, and you're listening to Faith Is, the program where we understand that faith is absolute confidence in the trustworthiness of God. And we stretch each other in God's direction, and we challenge each other, and we even ask and attempt to answer important questions. Do we have the answer to every question? Not likely. Only God has the answer to every question, and some questions He doesn't answer for us. But we're pursuing this week on the program this idea of instant sermon, and we do that at our church when there's a five-Sunday week or a five-Sunday month. It'd be nice to have a five-Sunday week, wouldn't it? I wonder what that'd be like. Well, anyway, we have a five-Sunday month in March. We moved it to this weekend, and so I moved instant sermon here on the program to this weekend. We've been talking about the question that came to me by somebody I was talking to recently about people who get tired of hearing about politics in church, and apparently at their particular church, the pastor had been addressing political issues, and they made the remark, and not real politely, I guess, but rather insistently, that the pastor shouldn't bring politics into church. They came to church to get away from all of that stuff. And so I've been helping us think about what that means, because generally what I have observed is that pastors don't talk about the important issues of the day because people have identified them as political and said to the pastor, you can't talk about political things. Well, my perspective on that is different than a lot of people's, and I understand that God cares about everything, whether it's political or not, and it's not my responsibility to stay away from certain subjects. It's my responsibility to address what God puts on my heart to address, and I hope that pastor was doing the very same thing. We also agreed a few minutes ago that things have really gotten focused on politics, and we talked about a couple of the reasons why that might be, but then I wanted to help us sort out some perspective on the general way we use the term politics, and I think we use it in general terms way too often, and we need to think a little more specifically about that. So I suggested that there's two ways to think about all of these things that are generally called political, and one is through the lens of citizenship, and I said citizenship, as I'm defining it, is the pursuit of righteous government. We want to be involved in the government so it does the right thing. And we've talked about that a little bit. And I said, now, there's nothing wrong with politics. Politics is the other side of this. And politics, and this is where we'll get to talking about that a little bit now, is the pursuit of power. Everybody who runs for office is pursuing power. They want to be the person to make certain decisions. They want to be the person that's in charge of doing this, doing that, or doing the other thing. They want to be powerful in that context. And so politics, because it gives someone, or by virtue of election, the responsibility and the ability to make decisions, politics, I'm calling the pursuit of power. Now, there's nothing wrong with pursuing that power. I mean, sometimes church people, I've heard religious leaders, pastors, they get all upset about this idea of power. Someone will always have power. Jesus was enormously powerful. We should not run from that. We need to understand how power is supposed to be used appropriately. And we need to understand that, yes, when someone seeks elective office, they are seeking a level of power. There is no question about it. So, when we elect people, we need to elect people who will use that power appropriately. You know, we don't object when someone in a decision-making office makes a decision we agree with and does the what we call the right thing. We understand somebody needs to do that. That's what a judge is supposed to do in a courtroom. That's what a mayor is supposed to do when it comes to his or her responsibilities, make decisions that are the right thing. City councils are supposed to do the right thing. And so we pursue righteous government. At the same time, we have to elect people who are pursuing power, and we have to elect the right kind of people. And I suggested just before we took the break that we need to elect the people that will lessen evil. Resist this idea that we only have a choice of the lesser of two evils. Look at the candidates and choose the one that will lessen evil. Of all the issues that are out there, who is going to choose the right policy perspectives that will lessen evil? And that's okay. We can do that. Now, somebody might say, well, does the church really have any business pursuing righteous government? Do the people of God have any business pursuing righteous government? Well, apparently so. I mean, the people in the Bible were concerned about righteous government. That's why they were horrified by the unrighteous kings in the Old Testament. That's why they celebrated when they had a righteous king, and things went well when they had a righteous king, and they went very badly when they had unrighteous kings. So, you know, pursuing righteous government makes sense, because we should pursue righteousness in every area of our lives. After all, would you prefer unrighteousness? I mean, most people wouldn't admit to that. They want their own way, which is a kind of unrighteousness, but that's a little different conversation. But we as the people of God, and as we elect, we need to choose people who will institute and do the things that will bring about righteous government. So let's talk about this idea a little bit more, about the person who says, I go to church and I'm overwhelmed by too much political talk and I want to rest from it at church. I don't really want to have all those extra conversations at church. I'm just tired of it. Can't I get a break someplace, and can't that break be at church? Well, that's a good question, and on the face of it, it's almost sounds difficult to refute, but let me challenge that a little bit. Maybe you're the person who thinks that way a little bit. If you are so overwhelmed with political talk, that's the first issue. Not what happens at church. The first issue is you expressing that you've heard and had your belly full, shall we say, of political talk. If that's you, then let me ask you, where does all of that come from? You know, I hear about people, and I don't know of anybody personally. I don't do it. Maybe you do it. I'm not trying to throw stones, but I am raising a huge caution. There are way too many people that the first thing they do in the morning is they turn on the television and they get a nonstop saturation with all of the nonsense that goes on. Well, if you do that, you are absorbing in your mind and in your heart all kinds of stuff. And so it's no wonder you get tired of political talk. Just turn it off. Maybe you listen to talk radio. This is a good program to listen to because I do it. I like it. And this is a good network to listen to because you get balanced, sensible voices, and you can pick and choose what you put into your heart and into your head by turning things on and turning things off. Choose the things that will help you, that will give you the truth, and turn off the other stuff that really is just intended to inflame you. They want you to watch. You are the product. If you wouldn't watch, they wouldn't sell advertising. So just turn it off. And choose carefully what you allow to influence you in your thinking. Then when you go to church and the pastor brings up an issue that you think of as political, and it may be citizenship. In fact, most of the time it is citizenship, properly understood, because we're talking about right and wrong here. When the pastor brings up some issue of citizenship, you won't find yourself automatically resisting it. You will say, oh, I wonder what God has to say about that issue. And you'll pay more attention to what God has to say than about what the television or some other pundit has to say. Okay? So we need to listen to that carefully. The other thing is, sometimes people will say when they go to church and they hear the pastor talk about something like that, they'll say, well, I go to church to feel good. I don't go to church to feel bad and hear about the problems. Well, aren't you precious? Well, that's one response to that, but let me unpack that a little bit. Do we go to church to feel good? Do we go to church to feel bad? Now, I want to assure you that I don't deliberately do things at our church to make people feel bad. And sometimes we remind ourselves of things that are intended to make us feel good, because if God has told us something, then we can depend upon that, and that is encouraging. That makes us feel better. But you know, at heart, it's not about you feeling good or you feeling bad. At heart, it's about you being right and staying right with God. And if you feel bad for some reason, maybe you and God need to come to a resolution. And by the way, God is always right. See, it's not about whether I as a pastor or your pastor makes you feel good or makes you feel bad. It's about, does your church, does your pastor get you to a place where you are right and you are right with God? That's really the heart of it. Are you right with God? And that's a good question to ask yourself. Are you right with God, or is all your frustration about this stuff because you're wrong with God and you just don't want to agree with God? And maybe your pastor is agreeing with God and you don't like that you have to hear that again. Maybe it's called conviction and God is saying to you, hey, we need to do some business. You need to agree with me. Because that's really what it comes down to, isn't it? It's not about agreeing politically. It's about agreeing with God. And we need to wrestle with those issues and come to resolution, because we all ultimately answer to God. All right, so that's a lot of questions kind of wrapped up in a lot of thoughts. But let's go on to some other things. And the other thing that I heard about recently, and that's why I thought we ought to include it here, was a lot of the reaction to the announcement, and particularly it was focused on the White House announcing that March 31st was Trans Day of Visibility. Well, or maybe it was said the Day of Trans Visibility. I don't remember how they exactly said it, but you remember March 31st. And everybody's reaction suddenly was, no, it's not, it's Easter. And they're right, it was Easter. And why they did that? Well, you can kind of begin to understand that, but you need to understand for sure it was done deliberately. It wasn't an accident. They knew very well that March 31st was Easter, and they knew very well that when they made a big deal of announcing that it was the Day of Trans Visibility, that it would provoke a reaction. I want to suggest to you, and I've heard this from some other people, and I think they're onto something, that when an organization or a person does something like that, their whole intent is to provoke a reaction. And they did provoke a reaction. Fortunately, I think the reaction was a lot correct, because it just pointed people to Easter. Said, no, it's not, it's Easter. Well, I understand they announced and tried to explain that March 31st every year is the Day of Trans Visibility. Well, I don't know where that came from, but okay, suppose it is. But that's beside the point. You don't have to make a big deal and poke a stick in people's eye by announcing it and trying to draw attention to that and draw attention away from Easter. So make sure you understand that was done deliberately to provoke you. But one of the best responses is to simply say, no, it's Easter. Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. And focus on that, because that makes all the difference. You see, when we focus on that, we remind ourselves that the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus was all intended to heal the brokenness in people, brokenness of all kinds. And our hearts, as followers of Jesus, go out to people who struggle with all kinds of issues. People who struggle with trans stuff, our hearts go out to them. It's heartbreaking to think about them. And we point them to a God who loves them and who didn't make a mistake in the way he made them. Now, please understand, there's a lot more ramifications to that than what you might think right off the bat. God didn't make a mistake in making you male or in making you female. And for people to come and say, I was born in the wrong body, is actually accusing God of making a mistake. And I want to tell you that if people who agree with that are simply deceiving you. God made you male and made you female on purpose, not by accident, and it's a destructive path if people try to convince you that you are something different than what God made you. It's just totally destructive. See, God created people, all people, in His image. If He created you female, He delights in you. If He created you male, He is thrilled by that. See, God understands the difference between male and female, and He's not surprised when He has a baby girl born or a baby boy born. He delights in that. He is happy for that. He did not make a mistake. You know, some people will say that, well, I was born in the wrong body by mistake. No, that is not what God says at all, because the Bible tells us that God saw your unformed body. That means before anyone else could tell whether you were a he or a she, God saw you, and He understands, and He had your life in mind. So let's not make the mistake of thinking that you were born male or female by mistake. God could have corrected any error if He had thought it was an error before you were born. So rest assured, He created you the way He intended you to be created. And we need to be honest enough with ourselves to say, hey, I trust God who loves me very much and sent His Son to die so that my life of sin and suffering and brokenness could be healed by the redemption that Jesus accomplished with His death, burial, and resurrection. So let's not make that mistake, and let's not fall into that mistake. Now, let me make one other observation. When I was thinking about this whole trans thing, that God loves people, even if they're confused by that, He wants to tell them the truth. And even when they don't want to hear the truth, they need to hear the truth that they weren't born male or female by mistake. God had a purpose, and He intended for you to be born male or female. But, you know, that whole issue came up because they provoked it. And so someone was asking about that in one of the White House press briefings, and the spokesperson made a statement about that and said that Biden celebrated Easter with his family. What they were trying to say was, no, we weren't ignoring Easter. We weren't trying to denigrate Easter. Biden celebrated Easter with his family. And the bells went off in my head. And I said, I wonder how many people will recognize what's wrong with that statement. I wonder if you recognized it. Maybe you heard it. Maybe you just now when I repeated it, I wonder if you heard it. But notice the spokesperson said that Biden celebrated Easter with his family. What's wrong with that statement? Have you thought about it a little bit more? Biden celebrated Easter with his family. Well, what's wrong with that statement is simple. Easter is a church-based celebration. How much better would it have been for the spokesperson to say, Biden took his family to church where they gave thanks for the resurrection of Jesus, but there was no mention of church attendance. We celebrate Easter at church. It's wonderful if our family's with us. It's terrific. I've got nothing against that. But it is not primarily a family celebration. It's a church celebration, and you should celebrate it at your church. You know, that little plain talk here, okay, you ready for this? I've been noticing over the years, a lot of people use Easter as an excuse to go someplace else. What's gotten into us when we have decided that the most significant event in human history, the event that validates everything that Christians believe, is an optional attendance, and we can go to church wherever we want to, just because we want to, on Easter? No, we should take our families, go with our family to church, to our church, to our home church. Easter is foundational to everything that we believe as Christians, and we need to keep it as that foundational event and not get distracted with other things. All right, so a couple of other questions that have come up. One of them is kind of easy, or at least it's easy for me. Another one I think is very important, and we'll get to that a little bit too. But somebody asked me, what is your favorite story or book of the Bible, and why? Well, that's a little bit challenging to answer because I don't usually think in terms of favorites. I think years ago, the story of Samuel was a favorite of mine. I think that's what I've been taught. I have a hard time remembering what people have told me. In recent years, though, it's pretty easy to say that the book of and the story of Daniel has become a favorite of mine. What's the favorite? I don't know. I really like Revelation a lot. I think it's largely misunderstood based on some of the study I've done. It's becoming better understood in these days, and I'm grateful for the scholars that have worked on it. But I really like the book of Daniel, and particularly the first six chapters, because they tell the story of Daniel and his friends taken out of their home, out of their country, into exile, a common event in those days by a conquering army. They were forced into service in a pagan ruler's court. King Nebuchadnezzar required them to learn the literature and the language of the Babylonians. They were required to become experts on all of that. They had no choice, but they found a way, Daniel and his buddies. We usually call them Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. There were more based upon reading of the scripture, but we focus on those four. And we read how they navigated those trying times. And they were trying times. There is no question about it. They were trying times. But you follow their story of how they made up their minds to be faithful to God and how God honored that faithfulness and used that to preserve lives, and how Daniel managed to be a trusted advisor in the royal court through several rulers, and how God culminated that story in the story of Daniel and the lion's den, and how God shut the mouth of the lions and Daniel was preserved. And it showed how we can have a blueprint for faithfulness in the midst of a trying situation. And I would encourage you to read the book of Daniel, those first six chapters. Now you get into the later chapters of Daniel and it gets much more complicated and not as readily apparent to be helpful as the stories are. But when you read the story of Daniel and you read the story of the three that were thrown into the fiery furnace, when you read the story of the handwriting on the wall, that'll get your attention. And when you begin to realize and think about what it meant to be faithful to God in times like that, that is a very, very significant situation. And so I want to encourage you to take a look at the book of Daniel. And you don't always have to have a favorite. I'm not the kind of person that says you have to have a favorite Bible a favorite Bible story or a book of the Bible. If you do, fine. If you don't, that's fine too. It's really not so super significant from my perspective of how you make those decisions. You just need to read the Bible. And Daniel means a lot to me, and I probably could preach sermons for the rest of my life just from those two or three or six stories, I should say, not just two, but those several stories from Daniel, because it's been so helpful to me. So then people ask about the verses related to temptation. And so I was thinking about that, and there's a couple of places that immediately came to mind, and I want to give you some encouragement when it comes to temptation. So in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, and this is a fairly familiar passage of Scripture, okay? It may not be familiar to everyone, but it's fairly familiar. I'm going to read it from the New Living Translation. That's one that I think is particularly clear, and maybe it'll be more helpful than some of the others. You may recognize some of the language, but maybe not. But it's a very helpful couple of verses from chapter 10 of 1 Corinthians, starting with verse 12. If you think you are standing strong, be careful not to fall. The temptations in your life are no different from what others experience, and God is faithful. He will not allow the temptation to be more than you can stand. When you are tempted, He will show you a way out so that you can endure. And we take a lot of comfort in that. We take a lot of encouragement that God won't tempt us or allow temptation. I shouldn't say God won't tempt us. God won't allow temptation to come more than what we can handle. And that should be a great encouragement to us. Now, it also talked about how God would provide a way out. And this is maybe along the line of trying to help us think about a way out. From James chapter 1, verse 12. We don't like to think about this so much, but this is very important. God blesses those who patiently endure testing and temptation. Afterward, they will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love Him. And remember, when you are being tempted, Do not say, God is tempting me. God is never tempted to do wrong, and he never tempts anyone else. Temptation comes from our own desires, which entice us and drag us away. These desires give birth to sinful actions, and when sin is allowed to grow, it gives birth to death. Now, that's a mouthful of what the Bible says about temptation and sin. Yes, in Corinthians, God will protect us from temptation, and he will provide a way out. And here it gives us a huge clue on the way out. What's it say? Temptation comes from our own desires, which entice us and drag us away. I think more of us need to come to grips with the reality that when we are tempted, it's because it's what we want to do. And if we want to address that, if we really want to stand up to temptation, we should start saying to God, your will, not mine. And we should start praying and saying to God, I don't want this. I'm putting this temptation aside. I'm turning my wants to righteousness and your will, not my will. See, we all want our way. And temptation comes back down to, do we want our way or God's way? And it says that when we follow these temptations, we end up in sin, and sin leads to death. And resurrection never ends, and that's why it matters. So put to death your desires and focus on the life of Christ and live for him with absolute confidence in his trustworthiness. I'm Pastor Rick.